Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 53, where we'll be discussing Pushing Daisies, episode 3, Fun in Funeral, and episode 4, Pigeon. We have Colleen.
Hi.
Caitlin.
Hello.
And Danielle.
Hello.
And I am your host, Brittany. And you can find us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. On Twitter, we are at re_watchable, and this post will be coming up on hypeable.com. So the first episode is episode 3, Fun in a Funeral, and just to give you a brief synopsis of it, Ned and Chuck speak to Lawrence Schatz, who they find out died 1 minute after Ned brought Chuck back to life. Meanwhile, Chuck decides to stay true to her original threat of baking antidepressants into her aunt's food in the form of Ned's pies. Olive unwillingly becomes the messenger in Chuck's plan and accidentally stumbles onto a secret about her unrequited lover's love. That's a little bit of a word jumble. So yeah, we're moving right along into the episodes now with 3 and 4. So I wanted to ask you guys, are we still on board with the style of the show? You know how it's very over the top with their CGI, and it's very playful and sort of like a fantasy type world. Are you guys enjoying it?
Yeah, I mean, that's what got me into the show originally, and it certainly kept me involved in it. I love the look of everything. I just noticed last night for the first time that when they go to the morgue, the exterior shots of the morgue look like someplace where the Queen of Hearts would live. It's all like red and white, and it really pops off the screen. And I love the wardrobe. I love everything Chuck wears or Olive wears. I think the pie hole looks so cool. Like, it's so different. I feel like it's different than anything else I've seen before. And I think it's great.
Awesome. Caitlin?
My first thought was that the aesthetic reminds me of Beetlejuice.
Yeah, definitely.
It was just my immediate thought, and now I can't get it out of my head that it's very Beetlejuicy. I like it. It's just reminiscent of that for me.
And that is totally it. I've been looking for a word to describe it, and you nailed it.
Beetlejuicy is the perfect word.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love it. I love, like, the bright colors, and I like that they just, like, the costumes match it, and Ned is very, like, plain, and Emerson's outfits are fantastic. Like, it's just, like, it never looks put together, but is put together, and I love all the old cars that they're using. I really, really, like, love the setting. It's not, like, distracting, whereas, like, sometimes if you're watching, like, Once Upon a Time, or especially Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, like, the CGI gets distracting sometimes, but here it's just so, like, seamlessly built in that I think it works beautifully. So going along with the style, they're continuing on in these episodes using the flashbacks to young Ned, sort of figuring out what he can and cannot touch, how much time he has between when he touches something and brings it back to life as to when the life of something else is taken. And we're sort of seeing more of like the value of what he touches versus what dies. Do you guys like these flashbacks, or do you think that they're getting a little old now and kind of repetitive?
I like the flashbacks. I mean, we'll talk about it later, but I have a few problems with characters, and I like the flashbacks because it gives more information, but I do wish that the flashbacks would be used for Chuck as well, because we know absolutely nothing about her, and I feel like she's just kind of a, not a placeholder character, but just someone that's like, here's the character, don't ask questions, but this is what it is. So I wish we had the flashbacks for her as well, because I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, at this point, you know that Ned loves her, but you don't know why. Like, you don't know what reason he has to be so infatuated with her.
And it doesn't feel natural to me. So I think that would help.
I just want to proclaim my undying love for Jim Dale's narration.
So good.
I just listened to him narrating the Night Circus audiobook, so I was like, oh, perfect. That's another thing that has a reminiscent of this for me. So I was just like, I love your voice. It is so perfect.
That it is good. I enjoy that very much so.
Yeah, and talking about going off of, like, we don't really know anything about Chuck or, like, why he's, like, brooding over this, like, girl for so long. Like, now that they're in the present and he just, like, woke her up and now she's like, oh, I'm alive and I have to stay with you forever. Do you guys, like, buy them as a couple right now? Like, how, like, fast they're just ready to be together forever?
No.
No. I agree.
I mean, maybe in any other world, I don't know that it would work, but because this is such a fairy tale kind of thing, like, that's what happens in fairy tales. So I guess I'm able to suspend my disbelief a little more just because of the style that they're evoking and storytelling.
Yeah, and in this episode, they even, like, really, the Fun and Funeral episode, they really played on that fairy tale thing, because I think there were a few points where they were saying, like, you're waking Sleeping Beauty, like, they knew how that felt, or, like, when she sees him as the Prince Charming with draped, you know. So I think they're really playing off of it, but I still don't really buy it.
I'd like to see them subvert it as it goes on. Like, I'm enjoying the way it's being established as kind of this fairy tale realm, but I hope that they do something to subvert it once, like, as we go on a bit.
Yeah, I'd like to get more information on the both of them. I mean, a little less on Ned, a little more on Chuck. I really like Chuck a lot. And she's a type of character who I wouldn't normally root for at all in any way, shape, or form. Like, I don't like New Girl, and I feel like she kind of reminds me of Zooey Deschanel a little bit. And I've seen that comment a lot about her. Yeah. And I think that was, like, my hesitation to even when I first watched the show was, I am not going to like this girl, but I really do. And I think that has to do with the setting, because she just, like, fits in beautifully with it.
I think so many people, like, listening to the last episode, everyone talk about the first two episodes of Pushing Daisies, they were kind of not huge fans of Chuck's, but I feel like the way she comes across at first here, I mean, she's just come back to life and she's taken this as sort of a second chance, because her, you know, before she died, she was just wasting her life living with her aunts, taking care of them, not really doing anything. And now she has this second chance of, like, she's solving crimes by waking people from the dead. I feel like that is so much of her character, is just, she's so excited and so, like, wide-eyed at this, you know, looking at the world a whole different way. So it is sort of, like, overwhelming to, like, take that all in as a viewer, that, like, okay, why don't you just simmer down a little bit? But I think it's, you sort of get used to her, and she sort of gets more used to her new lifestyle, I guess, as the show progresses.
Yeah, and I think that Emerson does a great job of playing the other side of it, where he's very down to business. He does not want Chuck involved. He is still set on, like, having Ned to himself and collecting the reward money and moving on, whereas, like, now Emerson has to learn to adapt with Chuck, and Chuck has to kind of watch herself around Emerson, even though she really doesn't. But I think the two characters, now that they're interacting more, especially in this episode and the following episode that we're going to talk about in a little bit, they are providing, like, their really good chemistry between trying to, like, make Ned make really tough choices for him, and he's very socially awkward about it. So does anyone else like Emerson, or not really?
I do.
It's impossible not to like.
I know. He's honestly next to Ned, because no one will replace Ned, but Emerson is easily my second favorite character.
Yeah, I'm not a giant fan of Chuck right now, just, again, because I don't know much about her, and it feels like we are supposed to like her, sort of no questions asked, and I'm not quite there yet. But I enjoy Emerson because, no, I don't know enough about him, but the way that he operates says a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that his character is more fleshed out maybe that way than like Chuck's is. But he, every scene he's in, I'm always like super attentive because he always has the best lines. And I don't know, he just always makes everything better for me.
He's grounded in a way the other characters aren't. Like,
yes,
I guess he reacts to the weird things in a way that's like, yeah, you should say something snarky about that. That's ridiculous kind of thing. So, like, he's silly in the way that the show is, but at the same time, he grounds it
in a way like that
it's easy to relate to.
He's sort of like the least fairy tale. So he sort of brings everyone down to earth and acts as like a good foil to everyone else. Everyone else's complete outlandishness.
Yeah.
So now that we've had two episodes where there's like they're more episodic, so like there's one case per episode. Do you like that? That's the direction this is kind of going in, where you're going to come into an episode, there's going to be like a dead person and they're going to solve that one case? Or do you think that it should be played out in a different type of way? Or did you even expect for it to like go that way?
Coming into it, I didn't expect it to be like a case of the week type of thing. And I feel like this is a lot different than any other kind of case of the week TV shows I've ever watched, because in a lot of those other TV shows, there's sort of a method behind how the characters go about solving the case. So you see all of these characters and you kind of learn to figure out who's the one that's guilty before the show is even like halfway over. And this one feels so different because they don't introduce a lot of characters. If that makes sense, it's different, but I think I'm enjoying it so far. I feel like they drop a lot of plot lines, like things that you think are going to develop over a bunch of episodes. They just immediately reveal them like an episode later, like after they introduce them. So I think that's...
Do you like that though? Because I feel like there could have been a lot of time spent with like Chuck and trying to like solve her murder or deal with a lot of more things, but it's sort of just outright like, this is how it is. It's over.
It's addressed. Like, they seem to have built up the fact that, oh, she doesn't know that she lived because this other guy died, and then it's just immediately told to her. And so I think that's kind of interesting that there's no mystery in those kind of things, but they're also a mystery of the week kind of TV series. It's a weird, you know, connection, I guess.
I get bored pretty quickly of case of the week stories. Like, I'm good with there being like two or three or four, like as you're establishing the show, but it gets really boring really quickly to me. So I'm kind of starting to get to the point where I need something that's going to connect the episodes overall, like some kind of overarching arc. Yeah. It doesn't need to be a big mystery to solve, but I need something that connects the episodes a little more than just this day we investigated this and then this day we investigated this. That gets boring to me pretty quickly, and it's getting to that area where it's going to be more boring the longer it goes on.
And I think that that was to the show's benefit a little bit in the fact that they did address certain things really quickly because it was such a short-lived show. So I feel like we're heading in a direction where there won't be too many loose ends. Obviously, I can't say much more, but we are heading in a direction where like you kind of feel like, oh, okay, like maybe I will get a lot more out of this show than I would if it was like five seasons long and I had to wait until like episode 4 of season 5 to figure out if they ever like do love each other. All right. But speaking of the connecting, you brought up a good point, the connecting, like backstories. Right now we have Kristen Chenoweth, who plays the lovely Olive, visiting Chuck's aunts and sort of putting things together for herself. So, are we a fan of Olive and the ants, or like, are they intriguing characters? Do you want to keep getting to know them and see what their role is going to become?
I love the ants.
The darling mermaid darlings.
Yeah, they sort of remind me of the ants in James and the Giant Peach, but yes. They're nicer.
Yes.
Like, is that weird?
No, I can totally see that.
But I think they're really fun, and I think they're interesting people who have personalities that I probably haven't seen before. So I'm enjoying them.
I'm kind of at a place where I don't understand why Chuck can't go see them, because it's made such a point that they're recluses. So who are they going to tell? Like, literally, it would not impact anybody else if she went and put them out of their misery, telling them that she's alive.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really see the problem as of right now, but I think it's providing a great basis for Olive to do her own little bit of investigative work and get to the bottom of what's actually going on inside of the pie hole. So it's kind of fun to watch her try and like figure stuff out and shove her face with pie while she's doing it. Speaking of pie, does anyone really, really, really want pie after watching any of these episodes? Because I really want pie all the time.
Those are the only feels that I feel, and that it's concrete. Like, they were chowing down on the cheese-covered apple pie or whatever, and I was like, oh my god, this is terrible. But the good part was my mom had just bought a pie, like, a day ago, so I went and had a piece. But, like, that's the only feelings I feel during the show is hungry.
The pies all look amazing.
Yes.
They do.
No, and I'm not even a huge fan of like sweets, but I just really want pie whenever I'm watching this.
I like pie filling more than like pie crust, but man, I ate that whole thing.
So who brought up the body issues? Is that you, Caitlin?
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, do you want to talk about that a little bit? So
let's talk about that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm not sure where this is going yet, because obviously I've only watched 4 episodes, but there is something, there's like an undercurrent in this show that is dealing with like issues of eating and body image, because we had that bulimic character that kind of was really randomly there, and that might have just seemed like
bulimic.
Out of place. But in the very next episode, we have that whole thing with Emerson getting caught in the window, and then at the end of the episode he's like, I'm gonna go on a diet. And I was like, there's something going on here with the show's treatment of eating issues or body issues, and I'm not sure what to make of it yet. Have you guys noticed that, anything like that?
I don't remember, like, when I watched through the show the first time when it aired originally, I don't remember really noticing it. I mean, certainly every now and again they add in, you know, a line or a reference or something that's kind of like, oh, I didn't expect that from this fairy tale sort of show. Like, it gets a little dark or a little, like, bordering on not being very PC, but I don't remember really it being that much of a theme in terms of like body issues and things like that. But I am definitely noticing things this time around that I didn't notice before. So who knows?
Yeah, I feel like they're connecting the pie a lot with body issues or even just like personalities or mental issues. Because along with the same vein, I don't understand the thing with like the homeopathic drugs that Chuck uses and like how she just blindly like puts them in the pies. Like, I find that really strange, and like that is supposed to help her aunt's like mental states. So I saw that in terms of your body issue thing as well, and I did think that the bulimic girl in what was that, the second episode, I felt like that was very out of place, and it was just kind of put in there to give the girls some sort of not personality, but something to her character. I don't know. But I agree, Caitlin. It is really strange.
Yeah, I felt that the like homeopathic drug thing was sort of just like, it kind of like just fit into the fairy tale-ness of it. Like this like dealer comes around and he's a showman and he like has all these things for you to sample, and yeah, she probably should have questioned what she was putting in her aunt's pie, but at that point, she it was just sort of like a magical moment, a magical easy fix for everything.
A magic potion.
A magic potion.
So we're not supposed to see it as like super sketchy as hell.
I didn't see it that way, but I could definitely read it that way now that you brought it up.
That's the boat that I'm in. And every time she does it, I'm like, what is going to happen? This is really concerning.
She is drugging them.
Yeah, she is.
And Kristen Chenoweth is eating it too. So, like, I don't understand.
I think it sort of more serves as a means to an end, like, as a way to get. She wants to get her aunts to be more social and not stuck in that house the whole time. And I think that's maybe just their simple sort of fairy tale way. Like, oh, we'll just give her this magic potion that she can put in the pies and send to her aunts and magically they'll be all better. Like, I think that's just they took an easy way out maybe.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, just drug them. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we are all about tying up loose ends really quickly on this show, so no questions asked. Take the drugs.
A great lesson.
Yes, a great lesson. So let's get a little bit more specific about this episode and kind of run through our favorite scenes and our favorite lines, and then we can maybe start talking about episode 2, and we can always circle back if something comes to mind. So my favorite scene from this episode was when the coffin closes and Ned can't touch the dead funeral director again to like kill him. And Emerson starts to freak out because he thinks that his life is going to be taken next. And he's like running out of the funeral home away from everyone. I rewatched it a couple times just because Emerson's really funny.
I like that one too.
All right. So Colleen, do you want to go next?
Sure. I love the scenes between Olive and Alfredo when they're in the pie hole. I just think they have such great chemistry. And finally, it's like, you know, she's so following after Ned and just wants Ned's attention and wants Ned to love her. She doesn't even notice that there's this guy right in front of her that's being so sweet to her and, you know, wants her to be happy and fixes the espresso machine. And she just totally overlooks it, but I just think they're so adorable together. And I love the scene. I love the line where he says the drugs are homeopathic, and she's like, meaning they deeply relate to gay people in that they're happy. I thought that was so cute.
All right, Caitlin?
My favorite scene was when Ned pulls back the sheet to see the coffin. He sees the dead funeral director, and he's so betrayed, but Emerson kept trying to warn him to come by himself. So it was just kind of, and I love Emerson's like, future me is saying, I told you so. So great.
And Danielle.
My favorite scene, is his name Alfred or Alfredo?
I think it's Alfredo. Oh, I think it has to be weird, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so exactly. I liked the scene where they talk about his fear of being sucked into space. It was just really, really strange and really funny at the same time, and it really caught my attention. So it's my favorite.
Yeah, that was weird when they like go into like his perspective and like the whole roof is being like ripped off of the pie hole.
I was like, oh, this is interesting. All right.
So my favorite line from this episode was right after Emerson's future self did tell Ned, I told you so. And he's like, it's like a Band-Aid. You got to rip it off. But Ned is like, I'm not a ripper. I pull up a corner a little at a time, and then I run it under warm water, and then I pull up a little bit more. It's a process. I just thought that was like the perfect long-winded explanation as to say, I do not rip Band-Aids off. So, Colleen, what was your favorite line?
I love at the end of the episode when he's mid-sword fight with the guy who's trying to make Ned feel guilty about having unintentionally killed the funeral director. And Ned says, everything we do is a choice. Oatmeal or cereal, highway or side streets, kisser or keeper. We make choices and we live with the consequences. If someone gets hurt along the way, we ask for forgiveness. It's the best anyone can do. And I just love the whole sentiment behind that. I love the kisser or keeper part. I think that really so puts their his relationship with Chuck into perspective. Like, it's that simple, kisser or keeper. It's so basic. And that's, you know, the underlying thing behind their whole relationship, that whole dynamic. I love that whole little speech there.
That's really cute.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin?
My favorite line came with Olive just being my spirit animal. And she says, musing on the idea of setting someone on fire doesn't mean you really want to set them on fire. It's just the thought of it that makes you happy. But only for a second, then you feel bad. But that second could be a lot of fun. I was like, you are me. This is great.
Who hasn't wanted to set someone on fire at one point or another?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Danielle, I'm really excited for yours.
All right, we're going to see if I can do a good Emerson impression. So obviously my favorite quote is from him, and he says, "Sucka played me like Booba the Fool."
That was pretty good.
Perfect.
Okay, good. And there's another one of those moments where I was just like, oh, good, this is happening.
Yeah, at that whole scene where he was also, like, stuck in the window and she kept calling him Winnie the Pooh was so funny.
Kick, poo, kick. Yeah,
kick, poo, kick.
And he listens, like, does it right away.
I know. After, like, yelling at her for insulting him.
Yeah, you'd think he'd be like, are you kidding me right now? Nope, just does exactly as she says.
All right, so that was a pretty good episode, I thought. And now the fourth episode in this season is called Pigeon, and it all starts with a dead pigeon, as great things do. So in this episode, Ned, Emerson, and Chuck investigate whether or not an airplane crash should be ruled a suicide. Chuck, finally feeling the need for some real human connection, is drawn to a man who appears to be the only survivor of the crash. Olive takes another trip to see Chuck's darling aunts, this time with a wounded pigeon. So, this is kind of like when we were talking about their relationship, like, is it moving too quickly and we're just to take it as it is? This episode was really interesting because it brought in another person that Chuck found herself kind of drawn to, and it kind of makes you think, like, did Ned ever consider what would happen if, like, Chuck were to run into another man and he not know who she is, so she can actually kind of start over again and how he sees it. So what did you guys think about Ned's plan kind of almost backfiring here for a little bit anyway?
I mean, I didn't even think about it. So I can see how Ned didn't. I think it's just because of the way that Chuck's kind of played off as almost not a person. Sort of, because she has nothing connecting her to anything besides Ned. So I never thought about it.
And it's interesting, you know, exactly as you said, like, about her not being a person, it's like she's, you just assume at this point, oh, well, she's Ned's. She and Ned will end up together. They obviously are in love and have this chemistry. And obviously it's never occurred to Ned, like, oh, hey, I brought her back to life. Now she could just go off with some other guy. And then it sort of presents the thought, like, well, what would he do if she did, if he was feeling especially jealous and wicked? He could just touch her again and then it would be done. Like, you can't be happy with me, then you don't get to live.
Oh, wow.
That would be kind of amazing, though. Yeah,
it would, like, really bring a whole nother element to Ned.
Maybe really that's how the show ends, guys. You don't know.
Does anyone else want to talk about that? We're good. So one thing that when I was rewatching this episode, one thing that, like, really struck me was I'm now starting again to, like, it's one of those things that's like, okay, you know, Ned cannot touch anyone, but I'm, like, really, really focused. And maybe it's just, like, because I'm, like, kind of nitpicky with certain things in television shows, but I am, like, really paying attention to what Ned touches and where he touches people. And, like, if he's grabbing onto someone's sleeve or if he's, like, what body parts he can, like, actually touch. Is that bothering anyone else, or am I just, like, going crazy?
It makes me crazy how close he and Chuck get, like, just randomly, like, they'll be making pies next to each other when they were, wrapping up the gifts at the end of the last episode, they are within a foot of touching each other. And I feel like if I were in Ned's position, I would be like opposite side of the room. Like, we can't even be remotely close. Like, I would be too nervous. And I feel like as much as he is nervous about it, like, he could bump elbows or something with her, and that would be it. Like, it makes me crazy. I can't, every time they're in a scene together, I can't not keep my eyes off of, like, how close they are, and oh my god, oh my god. Even though I know, like, obviously I've seen the show, I would know if that happens, but it still makes me crazy.
I was noticing that, too. There was, like, a scene in the pie hole where she, like, shifts and is super close to him. I was like, if you bump him on accident, like, be more careful.
Yeah,
I'm just, like, very neurotic about it now. And I, like, you know, I've seen the show, but still, I'm like, I just don't understand. It's, like, a perfectly, like, choreographed dance. Like, they know exactly where every body part needs to be, which I guess maybe even speaks to them being in sync so well. Who knows? Who knows? Casey, it's Olive. I just want to talk about Olive because, as I think Caitlin said, she's like your spirit animal. I think that Kristen Chenoweth is a brilliant comedic actress. I wasn't expecting it going into this show because, like, I had only known her from, like, Wicked and The West Wing. So... when I saw her come, like, she was going to be in the show, which, as I said in our introductory podcast, this is what drew me to the show to begin with, was her. I love her. But is she, like, bothering anyone? Or are you guys completely on board? Besides Caitlin, obviously. We know you're on board.
Well, the singing is really distracting to me.
Yes. Like, okay.
The first time she did it, like, the first time she did it, I was like, well, Kristen Chenoweth is in your show, so it would be a waste not to have her sing. But when she was singing in this episode, I was just kind of like, it took me out of it because I'm very aware that it's Kristen Chenoweth and they're having her sing because she's Kristen Chenoweth. So it pulls me out of it.
Same.
Oh my God, I love the singing. And I don't know if it's because it's Kristen Chenoweth, but I feel like if any show could get away with it, it would be this, because it's so weird. Like, of course someone's just randomly bursting into song, because that's what happens in fairy tales. I love it. I think it's great. There's not, if it really bothers you, there's not too much of it that happens.
Yeah, it's definitely not overdone, which I thought was good. I got nervous, like, the first time watching this set so early on. Like, yeah, they were already
a lot
utilizing...
in the first four.
Yeah, they were already utilizing, like, oh, we have this brilliant Broadway singer, let's make her sing. And I was like, oh, no, this is going to go down a path I don't want it to.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're going to use it. She's there. But I love her. I think she's so funny. And, like, her size just helps a lot, I think. She's, like, so tiny and, like, she can pull off all, like, these crazy outfits. And I absolutely love her. And I wanted to talk about her a little bit. So in these two episodes, we had, like, sort of some, like, comedic, like, stunt humor, like, where Ned pulls off the guy's, like, wooden arm. And in the episode before, we had, like, that weird Civil War backstory with the sword fight happening. Do you guys like that in the show? I think it works really, really well. It's not just, like, I think the show's, first of all, really well written. But I think it adds something to, like, the dialogue and just, like, when in that scene where Ned and Chuck are sitting at the table and there's just, like, a wooden arm in between them and they're trying to have, like, this important conversation about their, like, kind of, like, their relationship, and it's just there, like, and I thought it was really funny. So what do you guys think? Does it take anything away from the show, or do you enjoy having them in there?
I think it
fits. That's great.
Like, it could be cheesy in something that's more serious, but it just fits the tone of the show perfectly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Scene where it sort of started to bother me a little bit is when they're in the funeral home and he accidentally hits one of the corpses and then bounces back, hits another one, and then he's like, oh no, now I have to put them all back to... But I realized that that only served to then he gets to the third person and pokes him in the face, but he is actually alive. He was never dead to begin with. But I, like, when I first saw that, I was like, oh, is this going to be a thing where he's like, every time he's in the presence of a dead person, he accidentally touches them, and it's a whole, I thought that, I think that would be stupid if they did that, but I thought it was fine.
Well, that's good. I don't think we could have planned the first reaction any better. So, yeah. Huzzah for us.
We're on a level. Caitlin, yeah. And I are on a level.
Yep.
So, Caitlin, you want to talk about buried treasure in two episodes in a row? I think that's a really good point that there has been mention of buried treasure two episodes, and that's definitely very, very along the lines of a fairy tale. So,
yeah, it just,
what do you want to say?
It just struck me that the last episode was really focused on the idea of these twins who were stealing the belongings of the dead people, and it was their own treasure, and it was a buried treasure quest for, like, the pie team or whatever to go find it. And then
the pie team, I like that.
And then in this episode, it was literally, like, a buried treasure that the prisoner had hid in the windmill. So, like, that's a very fairy tale kind of story to go on the treasure hunt looking for treasure. It just was interesting to me that it was two episodes in a row that dealt with the same kind of idea.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't really, like, even put the two and two together until you brought it up, actually, that there were two types of, like, buried treasure. And it really worked well in the first episode we talked about, because you have, like, all of these references to Ned being compared to Prince Charming, and then the whole thing comes down, and there's all these jewels behind him, and it's, like, a long-lost treasure, and it just fits, like, that type of scene where he's standing there draped and holding a sword, and it fit really well there, but I didn't even put that together, so good observation. I'm going to keep looking for treasure now.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too, especially when you said it. This may be grasping at some sort of straw, but when I saw Ned and, like, the drapery came down around him, my first thought wasn't Prince Charming. It was, like, Julius Caesar.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
Same too.
Exactly.
So I don't know. Could the fact that we're seeing a bunch of, like, treasure and stuff, so it sounds like pirates and pirates steal, and Ned's kind of stealing life or death away from things depending on the situation. Is that too much of a stretch? Possibly.
No, because I think that also ties into what Emerson is doing. Like, none of this is actually really, like, okay.
Yeah, no, it's not.
So, like, because Emerson's, like, pillaging these, like, reward fees off of, yeah, these people who don't know that he has, like, a superpower friend, or, like, and can get their answers that they want. So, yeah, no, I definitely, my first thought was Julius Caesar, and then, you know, you have Chuck's little spiel about Prince Charming. Well, the narrator spiel about Prince Charming.
Right.
But, yeah, no, I don't think that's a stretch at all for where this show's going.
Something else that strikes me is that the windmills kind of evoke a Don Quixote kind of idea. So then there's, like, the ideas of, you know, tilting at windmills and what's real and what isn't. And that's also kind of fairy tale-y, but also kind of grounding the fairy tale. So it's interesting that that kind of gets evoked in this fairy tale-ish story.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually. Wow, you saw a lot more in this episode than I did. I was just sort of watching it being like, oh, Emerson, say something else.
You're very wise, and I just like all the pretty colors.
Yeah, right. That's a really good point, because we were talking earlier about how Emerson, as a character, brings the show kind of, like, back to the ground, but that windmill sort of plays on that as well, where what's real and what's not, and you have, like, Chuck and Ned at this one extreme and Emerson at this other. I think that it's really tying a lot more together than I would have given it credit for previously.
It's very much about, like, the ideals of chivalry and knighthood, and maybe in a way Ned is kind of a knight and he has his princess to protect or whatever.
Yeah, that's great. So how many oldies do we have? Is it me and
me.
Colleen, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So let's start with, Caitlin and Danielle then. Are you guys still ready to move forward with it, or are you liking it so far, or what are your thoughts after four episodes? Who wants to go first?
I guess I will.
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, Caitlin. I'm not completely sold on the show yet. There are a few things that are still bothering me. I mean, we talked about most of them. I just feel like it's not completely fleshed out. I'm not sure what the show wants to be. Or maybe it's because I was expecting something different, and so I still have those expectations, and the show is different from that. It's not something that I'm running home to watch, per se, but I am still enjoying it. It's not something that I would just immediately throw away, tell people not to watch and stuff like that, but I'm not sold on it yet.
Okay, Caitlin?
I'm enjoying it a lot. Fairy tales are like a thing for me. I wrote my thesis in college writing fractured fairy tales.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I really love exploring fairy tales. So I'm interested to seeing where this goes. The dialogue is fantastic. I really love the Beetlejuice aesthetic that they've got going on. I do, like I said earlier, hope that we're going to start seeing a little more that ties the episodes together, just because the case of the week can get kind of stale as it goes. But I love the world and I love the characters, and hope we'll learn more about Chuck in particular. But I'm enjoying it, and I hope that it kind of fulfills the potential that I see it could really have.
That's good. Colleen, what do you love most about the show as an oldie?
I love everything. As I said, I think it's a beautiful show. I also just think it's really funny. I mean, Emerson and Oliver, obviously the real standouts, they get all the best lines. But then Lily and Vivian, Chuck's aunts, are probably my two favorite characters. They are just so interesting and so great. And the actresses, Susie Kurtz and Ellen Green, are both great. And they're both just the right amount of weird that they just really make those characters come to life and make you love them. And I guess the humor of the show is just sort of offbeat or dark enough that it's right up my alley. And I love it. When it was on TV and I was, you know, tuning in to watch it every week, I was so excited to see what they would do.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I, like Caitlin also said, I think the writing is my absolute favorite part of the show. I think, and that has a lot to do with the actors and actresses on it too. Like, I love Ned's awkwardness and his delivery of his lines and just how fidgety he is. And that just could be a Lee Pace thing, but I'm going to give the credit to the writers on that one. And I love the dark undertones of the show set against such like a fantastical Beetlejuicy, if you will, setting. And that's absolutely my two highlights of the show, besides Kristen Chenoweth, which is, you know, she's there, whatever. She's great. All right, so let's wrap up our talk about this episode, Pigeon, with our favorite scenes. And my favorite scene is actually Danielle's favorite scene, so I'll let her deliver it.
Okay. Sorry.
I saw you write it. I was like, oh, that's definitely where I was going. So, Colleen, what was your favorite scene of this episode?
My favorite scene, as I said earlier, I love the singing. I love every time Kristen Chenoweth sings on the show. So I really loved Olive and Vivian singing Birdhouse in Your Soul. It's a They Might Be Giants song. I don't know if you know it, but it's a great song. And it's so cute. And obviously I love to hear Kristen Chenoweth sing anything at any time. But I don't know if you guys know Ellen Green, who plays Vivian, was she was Audrey in the Little Shop of Horrors movie.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so she's done all sorts of theater and whatever, and she's great. She's got a great voice, too, so I thought it was so smart of them to take the two of them, put them in a backseat of a car, and have them sing a song that, again, like, they didn't pick some obvious pop song. They picked this, like, offbeat song by this sort of cult favorite band and just had them sing a little bit of it. And I remember when I was watching it on TV, I keep referencing it when I first watch it. I don't know why. I remember at the, like, the lines that sort of lead up to it in the scenes beforehand are very, like, they sort of reference the lyrics in the song. And I remember being like, this sounds like a song. It sounds like it's from something. And then they sing the song and it's like, oh my God, there it is. So I just love it. And I loved that sort of, that Vivian seems to be softening. She sort of softens first before Lily does. She's more like strict and, you know, dead set on being bitter and unhappy and the two of them being alone in that house. But Vivian, it seems more, she wants to reach out and connect with someone, and she and Oliver sort of forming a bond, and I really like that.
I thought they were making up lyrics.
Yeah. I did too. Idea. I had no idea it was a real song.
Yeah. It's a great song. Just listen to it. They might be dying.
I will definitely listen to it now. Caitlin, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when they dug up Jackson to talk to him, and just like, I mean, obviously, I thought of Supernatural because that's yes. who I am and the digging up of bodies. But when Chuck puts the sunglasses on his corpse and he sits up with the sunglasses, like, could you get any more Beetlejuice? Like, I just was dying laughing because that visual was hilarious.
That was a great scene. All right, Danielle, tell the listeners our favorite scene.
Yes. Brittany and mine's favorite scene is Ned trying to shoo away a squirrel. Because he just kind of, he gives like a little dismissed, like you're dismissed flick of his wrist to try to get the squirrel away, but really doesn't do much to, like, I don't know. It is so funny.
Because it's like you have like the clock kicking, like ticking down too, and it's just like everyone's all stressed and he's like, come on, go away. Yeah.
He's not even like part of what's going on. He's just in the background trying to shoo away a squirrel.
Great. All right, let's talk about our favorite line. So, Colleen?
My favorite line is, I mean, there were so many good ones. I also really liked the Danielle's in a second. But I just love, first of all, Jayma Mays from Glee. Who's in this? I don't know if any of you watch Glee, so if any of you know who she was.
But we're also excited. Yep.
Yeah.
Still so, I mean, first of all, not to go off on a tangent here, but I am going to go off on a tangent. Like, of course she's going to be on the show because she looks basically like a human cartoon character. She has those big eyes. So I think she fits in perfectly, and she's so funny. Like, we don't really get the full effect of her funniness on Glee, I don't think, but she's so great in this. I just really love her line of, I was born into a life of windmillery. It makes me laugh every time. I don't know why. So weird. That's all.
No, that's a good point. Jemma Mays is like perfect for the show. She's like cookie cutter, like you belong in Pushing Daisies, mm-hmm. and she probably should like live there in her like off time.
Yeah, right.
Caitlin, what was your favorite line?
Mine was when they went to go talk to the windmill. I'm not even sure what she was.
It's like a real estate agent or like a historical preservationist. I wasn't sure.
Something like that. But they go into her office and she's talking to them about the windmills. And then she falls asleep and we get the reference to the pilot when Emerson goes, that's a narcoleptic. Necrophiliac's the other one. And Ned goes, yeah. It's just it's so funny.
It's a great vocabulary lesson for all the viewers.
Yes.
The innuendo on this show is amazing. Like, it's all over the place. Like, there's this amazing cartoony aesthetic. And then you listen to the dialogue. It's like, did you really just say that?
Danielle.
Just because there's vodka in my freezer doesn't mean I have to drink it. Wait. Yes, it does. Done. Yes. Line.
Emerson, of course.
Yes.
And mine also is an Emerson quote. Oh, that makes it sound like really literary if I say it like that.
Emerson, yeah, it does, quote. Actually.
Well, it is pretty literary. What is the rate of exchange on the life of a bird? Because if it's equal to or greater than mine, I need to get back to my car. He's like, and this goes along with my favorite scene from the episode before this. He is just so afraid of being in any close proximity to Ned when he's like touching these people.
I would be too. So
when he brings the bird back to life, he's like, oh, listen, I'm going to have to run if a bird's life is equal to mine.
I think my favorite line of the entire show is still going to be in the pilot when he's like, bitch, I was in proximity.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Oh my gosh. Emerson is so great. All right. So do we have any final comments before we get to our listener feedback? Anything else you want to say about the show?
I think I'm good. I said my piece for these four episodes we've seen so far.
All right. Sounds good. So let's get to some listener feedback. Caitlin, do you want to take the Twitter comment that we have?
Sure. This tweet is from Michael, who's at An Eagle's Lament, who says, loving Daisy so far, especially the contrast between the noir style or story and atmosphere and the colorfulness of the show. And I completely agree. It's kind of a disconnect, but it works really well.
Mm-hmm. And Colleen, do you want to read the first typable comment?
Sure. This is from the good ship Destiel. if they had kept the mystery of Chuck's murder going for the whole season, I would have been bored. I'm glad to hear that not everyone loves Chuck, however, because I never liked her. Aw, poor Chuck. Mm-hmm.
Poor Chuck, but I have to agree with the first part of that. I'm glad that it was sort of just like, boop, okay.
Yeah, especially with the way...
like Veronica Mars, except that wasn't...
with the way that, like, her murder was, it would not have supported at all, like, multiple episodes, so...
They could have made an arc that had twists and turns that I don't think would have been boring, but the way they did it, like, we don't even know who did it.
Yeah.
Like, it was just a dude in a mask. Like,
some guy, random guy.
That never would have supported it, but I do think they could have supported a season-long arc with that.
And Danielle, you want to take the last typable comment?
Sure. This is from Pinkie Puff. And they say, just want to say how happy I am you guys are doing this. Smiley face. So, yay. Smiley face right back at you.
So, as we wrap up, remember you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. And you can reach out to us on Twitter, and we may read your feedback on the show at re_watchable. This post will be available on hypeable.com. And please be sure to leave us some iTunes reviews. We didn't have any this week. And as an added incentive, apparently we would like to send you a giant wedding cake filled with pigeons. If you do, leave us some iTunes reviews. So make sure you do that.
If you ever find yourself in jail, we will send you letters by pigeon. So be sure to leave us an iTunes review to just cover all your bases.
Yeah, either way, you'll get a pigeon. So. Yeah. There's
that's
really
a win-win.
You can't lose. Yeah, you cannot lose in this situation, guys.
Who doesn't want a pigeon?
Especially after this week.
Yeah. Especially might be dead or alive. We can't make any guarantees.
Yeah, we cannot make any guarantees, especially the ones in the pie. They might not make it. Or no, they're not even in a pie. They're in a cake. We should make them in a pie. That's what we should do. All right, so we're going to sign off now, and we'll see you for episodes 5 and 6. So I'm Brittany.
I'm Colleen.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Danielle.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye.